I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's get back to more Rami Makhlouf on Chicago's Sports Radio 104.3 The Score.
The bumper music is going hard tonight, Grant Leader. Like, it's all like hard rock, go lift some weights type stuff, man. Like,
I can play some calmer stuff if you want.
No, it's fine. I'm enjoying it. As like I said, you played the Rage Against the Machine, Bulls on Parade to start the show. That got me fired up and ready to go to bitch about the Bears for an hour and then the first hour of the show.
I thought it fit kind of the segment, you know?
Yeah, it did. Yeah, it fit the vibe. It fit the vibe. I was kind of a Bull on Parade in that first segment going at the Chicago Bears and what I've seen as some of the flaws in the first couple weeks of free agency, but wanted to move on. If you missed that, if you want to hear my thoughts on that, you can always go to thescorechicago.com or punch up that handy dandy Odyssey app and listen to whatever you want, whenever you want, whenever it is convenient for you. Just one game going on in the NCAA tournament right now. It is Iowa and Clemson very early on in that game, like literally just a few minutes into that game. Iowa leads 5-3. I was looking at their seedings. It's 9-seed Iowa against 8-seed Clemson. So set to be a close one. We'll keep an eye on that and all the NCAA action for you. Also, I'll be talking some Cubs with Evan Altman of Cubs Insider coming up at 7:25 and Bruce Levine, of course, Score baseball analyst. He'll be here at 8 o'clock to talk Cubs, to talk Sox, whatever it is that you got baseball. Bruce Levine has it covered, including that new lot that the White Sox seem to have bought to maybe put a stadium. We'll ask Bruce about all that when he joins me at 8 o'clock. But opening day, just 6 days away, and just wanted to check the temperature of Cubs fans, you the Score listener, at 312-644-6767. And you can catch Cubs baseball right here on the Score all season long, including this weekend, right here on the Score. Zach and Ron have the call of Cubs versus Mariners starting at 8, then Cubs versus Brewers on Sunday starting at 1:55 as they start to wrap up spring training. All of it can be heard in crystal clear FM quality on 104.3. The Score. Cubs spring training coverage on the Score is sponsored by Sloan, the leader in smart water and commercial restroom solutions. I am live from the Hyundai Score studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. What would you consider a successful season for the Chicago Cubs this year? 312-644-6767. Try and squeeze in a couple calls or text, whatever you're inclined to do before I'm joined by Evan Altman of Cubs Insider at 7:25. What would you consider a successful Cubs season with the regular season set to start 6 days from today right here on the Score? 312-644-6767 is how you can get in on that conversation. I kind of feel a little bit, not entirely, but a little bit about the Cubs, the way I feel about the Bears to this point in the offseason and the way that they conducted the offseason. Not entirely, because I do see upgrades around the diamond. They're better at third base with Alex Bregman than they were with Matt Shaw, and I like Matt Shaw in that sort of utility role. He's played 7 positions in spring training so far this year. But, I mean, you lose a bat like Kyle Tucker, and that's that's hard to replace. That is hard to replace. It looks like, and Craig Counsell informed Moises Ballesteros today that he will make the big league club. But that's Bregman's bat will go some way in replacing some of that production and that threat in the middle of the lineup. But you definitely offensively, I guess you can't say definitely, baseball's weird and fluky sometimes, but on paper, it looks like you took a small step back in terms of the everyday lineup that you're going to throw out there with Kyle Tucker leaving for the Los Angeles Dodgers and $250,000. That being said, you did go and get Cabrera and boosted your pitching a little bit. We saw what Cade Horton could do. I think there's better from him to come in the 2026 season and beyond. You should get Justin Steele back at some point. Lost a lot of good arms in the bullpen. And that's another spot where on paper they took a step or a half step back. But you also look at what Daniel Palencia was able to do in the World Baseball Classic, and you're feeling really good about the back end of that bullpen. If he can dial that up consistently this year and sort of keep things under control, you got yourself a pretty damn good closer, it seems, in Daniel Palencia, and that'll go a long way in patching up that bullpen and getting some good performance out of them. And I have a high level of confidence in Tommy Hotovy and Craig Counsell and the whole Cubs pitching, coaching staff and the lab and the scouting and development that they seem to find arms for that bullpen, even if it's a little rocky at the start of the season, who can do more than most people would expect from them. So while I see some steps back or half steps back at various spots on this roster, when I ask and answer the question, and you can answer the question at 312-644-6767, what would you consider a successful Cubs season? I'm still setting the bar pretty high, man. I'm still setting the bar pretty high for this Cubs team for a few reasons. One, I like some of the moves that they made in the offseason. And two, I think there's a lot of room and potential for improvement from within, for growth, for guys on this team to get better. Like when you look around the diamond and you have a PCA in center field, you have a Michael Bush at first. You have some young talent all around this team. The Moises Ballesteros, who I just mentioned, who Craig Counsell is very high on. And I wanna play some sound from Craig Counsell talking about Moises Ballesteros a little later on, but I see a lot of room for potential for growth from within and development. And improvement that way. Specifically, as I said, Cade Horton can be better. I think getting Justin Steele back at some point, who you missed most of last season, can make you better than what you were last year. The bar is high for what's a successful season for the Cubs this year. It starts with they got to win the division. If they don't win the division, now, obviously, if they get in as a wild card and make an unlikely deep playoff run, my tune could change, but for me, sitting here on March 20th, 6 days before the season starts, what is considered a successful season starts with winning the NL Central. It's enough of this already. And I said this at the start of the show. By the way, Grant, have I given out the Milwaukee numbers at all? Do I owe you any money in the first hour of the show?
No, not right okay. now.
All right, good. 312-644-6767. I do host a show daily in Milwaukee, and I don't have like a high level of contempt or hate for the Milwaukee Brewers as a team, as an organization. I save all that for the St. Louis Cardinals. But I'd be lying if I said I wasn't irritated and annoyed by the fact that the Cubs and under the stewardship and the ownership of the Ricketts, with more money than God, and being a big market club, which they are, and being the big team in the big market, no offense to the White Sox, but that's just how this thing is played out in terms of how they spend, that they keep on coming up short, and you stole their manager. Like, you spent a boatload of money to steal their manager and bring over, like, whatever that magic pixie dust or whatever like knowledge and secret sauce or whatever the code is that needs to be cracked. Like, you went and stole their manager to bring that over here, and they've still won the division over you 2 years in a row. And they've still won the division 3 out of the last 4 years, and have made the playoffs 7 out of the last 8 years, and that should simply not be the case. It shouldn't. Like, when you look at what these teams are, what these organizations are on paper, and the resources and the assets that they have at their disposal, the Cubs, not just with the Brewers, the Cubs should be better consistently than the rest of this division. The Reds, the Cardinals, the Brewers, the Pirates. Like, the fact that they haven't been able to do that is disappointing and frustrating and irritating. So for me, a successful season starts with, like, getting that boogeyman out from under the bed and beating the Milwaukee Brewers in the NL Central and bringing home a division championship. But it goes beyond that for me. How about you? What would you consider a successful season? 312-644-6767. When the playoffs come around, And I don't think part of the reason why I say you have to win the division, I don't think this can be true if you don't win the division. When the playoffs come around, when October comes around, isn't there a song like that? When October comes, I want the Cubs to be legitimately in the discussion as a team that can win a World Series, as a World Series contender. And that's more like, that's more objective than anything like hard and fast that I can give you, like win 95 games, win the division. And I know that's a high bar. They won, what, 92 or 93 last year, if I remember correctly? I want a better team than what I saw last year. So I'm saying win 95 games, win the division. Those are like hard and fast things that I can put on what I would call a successful season. This is more objective and a little bit more fuzzy. But I think we all know, like, when a postseason starts, while yes, anything can happen in Major League Baseball's postseason. It's wild. It's wacky. It's fluky. There are teams that we don't expect to make deep runs, making deep runs almost every year. But I think we know who are those three, maybe four teams in the playoff field that the baseball world looks at and goes, yeah, that's one of those teams. That's one of those teams that can win a World Series. And I they don't have the payroll, they don't have the talent on paper that the Los Angeles Dodgers do. But outside of that, I don't look at a team in the National League and see one that looks more the role of World Series contender than what the Chicago Cubs do. And I say that knowing that the Milwaukee Brewers are going to be right there with them throughout this season, because they always find a way to do that. But even with the Brewers, when they win a division like they did last year, I think people still look at them. Even when they had 97 wins, the most wins in Major League Baseball last year, I think people still look at them as like, if they made a deep run, it would be like a Cinderella story type thing. There is three or four teams every year when we enter the postseason that people look at and go, yeah, that's a team that looks like a World Series champion. For me, though, that's what I need by October. Now, that doesn't mean that they'll finish the job and they'll win a World Series, but I want them to be in that discussion. I want them to be in that stratosphere of Major League Baseball teams that people look at them as a legit World Series contender and not a team that snuck into the playoffs, a team that would be a fun story or could sneak up on you. Like all these tags that we put on teams that we don't really think of as World Series contenders. I don't want that with this Cubs team. I want this Cubs team to enter October as like a powerhouse. I want them to enter October with all the respect of the baseball world as a team that could legitimately win a World Series and then make a deep playoff run. NLCS would be nice. Like an NLCS appearance would be nice. I'm never like a World Series or bust, World Series or die type of guy, or really in any sport, like championship or bust. I feel like that's a little crazy, and you're going to drive yourself crazy with that type of mentality. But win the division, win like mid-90s games, like 93 to 95 games, be a legit World Series contender when the playoffs start, and make a deep run. And while even if it doesn't end the way I want it to end, only one team's season ends the way that their fan base wants it to end, I'll still be able to, once the frustration and disappointment of however the season does end, if it's not a World Series, I'll be able to step back with some perspective and go, all right, that was a successful season for the Chicago Cubs. Check off those three boxes. Win the division, be a legit World Series contender by October, and make a deep playoff run, and this is a successful season. And that's a high bar. But I think that's where this organization is at in terms of the plan, the blueprint, the timeline that they've set in terms of the signings that they've made and acquisitions that they've made via trades, as well as the development of some of their younger players, as I talked about at the start of this segment. I think that's where this thing is at. I got time for just a couple calls or texts asking you what would you consider a successful Cubs season with things set to go here in 6 days. Evan Altman is going to join me. I'll ask him the same question from Cubs Insider at about 7:25. Let's get in Brian. He's in Blue Island. Now he's on the score. Brian, what's a successful season for the Cubs this year?
I think you touched on it. I think you touched on it. You hit it in a major way. Let's put it this way. The conversation did start off a little White Sox fan festy for me. It kind of sounded like you were just leaving the convention or something. but here we are. Look at you hit it. 90 plus wins. We'll get that. We exceeded that last year. We upgraded. Okay, we upgraded it. Nobody wants to see Kyle Tucker grounded out to third with the woo is me. I'm in a contract year. I know I'm going to be gone. My finger hurts. You know, here we go. I'm happy he's gone. Go play with your buddies in L.A. Have a great time. We upgraded. I couldn't believe they added Bregman. I thought it was a great move. Better clubhouse player. 10 times over. 10 times over. Massive move them getting him. We'll get Steele back. We got Boyd coming off an all-star type of season. I think, let's put it this way. You get over the hump. You knock off Milwaukee this year. You take the division. They will add. They will add.
At the deadline, like before the deadline, you're saying they'll add, you think?
I truly believe that. And here's why I say that. Doesn't it just seem like a Ricketts move almost? Kind of like, are we looking for a lockout next year? Are we anticipating that? It feels like that's coming, right? I could see Ricketts just wanting to go all in this year and just say it, you know, screw the noise. Let's go, boys. Let's win it here. We'll lock out next year, but then he'll sit on it for you. I think it's going to be a big season, boys. I'll hang up there what you got to say.
Brian, I appreciate the call. I won't say that Kyle Tucker, I'm glad he's gone, or he was a bad clubhouse guy. I don't know that he was a great clubhouse guy. From everything I hear about Alex Bregman, he's a great clubhouse guy and like a vocal leader and a guy who's more than willing and even happy to like teach and share his knowledge with some of the younger guys. Not even just the younger guys. Like Isaiah Suzuki said that Alex Bregman kind of pointed out some things to him. He's talked to pitchers about some of the things that they were tipping last year. So I think he's more of a positive clubhouse-wise and leader-wise than Kyle Tucker was, but Kyle Tucker, man, and I know the second half of the season was frustrating. I was as frustrated with anybody with the finger and the way that the Cubs handled it and the lack of production and what that did to the rest of the lineup. I think that really affected PCA and Seiya Suzuki before he broke out in the playoffs. With all that being said, Kyle Tucker, I mean, the numbers tell you the whole story, that guy is like, that's an MVP caliber bat that the Cubs had in the middle of their lineup, and that just changes the way that pitchers pitch to the entirety of your lineup. 773 says, half step back offensively. Applause. I can't believe how little people have talked about this for a team that had trouble scoring runs against the Brewers in the playoffs. 219 says, Cubs World Series or the season is a bust. I can't go that far. And one more text. Do you want 90 to 95 wins with more wire-to-wire consistency? Young guys like Shaw, Moe, PCA, and Horton progress. Worry about the playoffs when they get there. I think that's fair. I think that's a good bar to set for what would be a successful season. I wonder what Evan Altman of Cubs Insider would say about this. We'll find out that and more. All things Cubs with Evan Altman when he joins me, Rami Makhlouf, next on The Score Evening Show on Chicago Sports Radio, 104.3 The Score.
On Aspire with Emma Greed, we talk about mindset, ambition, and the work that actually moves the needle. Listen to Aspire with Emma Greed, available where you get your podcasts.
Let's get back to more Rami Makhlouf on Chicago's Sports Radio 104.3 The Score.
It's really a confidence thing for me. It's like that's one of those, like, you're in a really big moment. You know how you react to those moments. And that's the biggest thing, and you've had success in a moment like that. So it gives you a lot of confidence, I think, that, you know, you call on probably when the bad stuff happens more than anything.
That is Craig Counsell talking about Daniel Palencia and his performance in the World Baseball Classic for Team Venezuela, who took home the championship. I am Rami Makhlouf with you on The Score here, Score Evening Show on a Friday evening. Joining us now to talk all things Cubs and, you know what, a little World Baseball Classic as well. You can find his work as editor-in-chief of Cubs Insider. Always a pleasure to welcome in Evan Altman on the show. Evan, how are you this evening, my man?
I'm doing really well. This is my second appearance on the FM station, and it's not with Rosie, so it makes it that much better. It's a Friday night, right? I don't have to be on with Rosie, so I love the guy, but hey, Friday nights with you, man, this is where it's at.
Appreciate that, Evan. I suck too, though. You know what I mean? Like he's not,
well, but the bar is really low. Clear, right. So.
This is true, Evan. Let's start with what we heard Craig Counsell talking about right there. Man, I really liked Daniel Palencia last year. I don't know if this is a safe assumption or leap to make. But he looked like he had found something else for this World Baseball Classic and took things to another level. And you just hope that translates to MLB success and an even better reliever and closer than what we saw from him in that role for the Cubs last year.
Yeah, I mean, he looked just absolutely electric, right? Like, it's the ebullience, if you will, right? Just the absolute throwing the glove up and really, and just pounding his chest and being like, he looks like a closer. And I know that's maybe kind of trite and mm-hmm. what have you, but he really has that feel of a guy who you trust to come in there. And when you talk about coming in and blowing away, what I was most impressed by was not just that he closed the game, not just that it was against the U.S., but it was against three left-handed batters. That he sat down 1-2-3, and he had some pretty big splits last year in a traditional sense. So lefties really tagged him quite a bit more than righties did. So for him to go out there, cut loose that triple-digit fastball and sit those guys down, I think was a really, really positive sign. So as long as he can stay healthy, I really think this guy's got the makeup, the mentality to go out there and take the ninth inning for the Cubs this year.
I do too. I'm really confident in him coming out in that ninth inning or maybe an eighth inning if you need a four out or a five out save here and there to come in and close things out. There was a major overhaul of the bullpen though, Evan, after it closed out last year as one of the strengths of this baseball team. And a lot of those guys aren't back and they didn't necessarily replace them with known commodities or guys that were big splash signings to fill out that bullpen. How are you feeling about what comes in between the starters and Daniel Palencia?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things we've seen from Jed Hoyer, and this even goes back to his tenure working with Theo Epstein, is they're very reluctant to pay big money, to do multi-year contracts for relievers, and when they have, it's kind of come back to bite them. So they're pretty comfortable recycling a lot of these guys. But the one thing I like that they've done here is they have broken from tradition a little bit. You know, they went and got a guy in Hunter Harvey who's a really hard thrower to kind of pair up with Palencia back there. But they go out and get a guy like Hobie Milner, right, who gets it from a weird arm angle, not a big velocity guy. But when you talk about – you look at the success the Rays have been able to cultivate over their tenure, and so much of it comes from having a bullpen and a staff in general, but in particular the bullpen that kind of pitches – around the clock, so to speak, with all these different arm angles from both sides. And that's what we've seen a lot with the Cubs here. You know, they've got some guys who are more over the top. They've got your three-quarter and your sidearm and the different angles, different velocities. So they can kind of mix and match a little bit. So rather than just trying to blow everybody away, they're able to give different looks, have different stuff to really match up well. And so, you know, the jury's still obviously out. We'll have to wait to see what they do. But I like what Hoyer has been able to do. I love what they've done with Tyler Zombro in the front office, you know, former Tread guy who's really plugged into a lot of what Tread Athletics is doing out there in North Carolina, but in general, kind of the pitching development. And that gives me a lot of hope because I feel like they're able to find some of these guys who have maybe been overlooked and then exploit some of those little outlier tendencies that they have.
Talking with Evan Altman of Cubs Insider here on the Score Evening Show. Rami Makhlouf, your host. And yeah, Evan, I was talking about this team and what I would consider a successful season and just how they get there before I brought you on. And I said to some level, and I don't know if this is misguided, you tell me, there is some level of kind of blind faith or trust when it comes to the Cubs and their development and handling of bullpen, starting with Craig Counsell and Tommy Hotovy, but going all the way throughout the program and the system with some of those guys that you just talked about. It sounds like you have that same almost blind faith or trust that, well, they might not have the recognizable names or the arms that knock your socks off. They're going to find the best combination of relievers somehow, some way over the course of the season.
Yeah, I mean, and that's kind of what we've seen, you know, generally, and it didn't start out really well last year. And you know, you look at a guy, though, like Brad Keller, who was a former starter who came in on a non-guaranteed minor league deal, made the roster, you know, had a really nice spring, made it, and then turned himself into one of the best relievers in baseball and parlayed that into a really nice contract. That the Cubs, you know, weren't willing to match. But that's kind of what they've done with a lot of these guys. They'll bring in people who are overlooked somewhere else, underutilized, and they somehow manage to keep doing this. And it's gone on for long enough with enough different players that you stop looking at it as luck and you just assume there's something they see there. And with a lot of them, maybe the organization that they're with has a certain profile that they're looking for. And, you know, pitcher X doesn't fit that, but the Cubs see something they feel like they can use to their advantage, or maybe they can change the shape of a certain pitch. And again, you know, I'll go back to Tyler Zambro working at Tread, finding with a lot of these guys, understanding, is this guy a supinator or a pronator? What works best from his arm slot? Maybe he's got a certain fastball he's throwing too often that just doesn't fit as well. And they're able to find those little things. And when you think about it, you know, the bullpen with as much, I guess we could call it, it's just so fickle from year to year,
right,
that you may as well go try to rebuild it and find some guys that fit and go from there and let Counsell figure it out. So, yeah, I mean, I do have faith in it, but I really, really like what they've got there. I have a little bit more concern maybe with the starting rotation, but I think the bullpen will be fine.
See, I was just going to say, with the starting rotation, maybe you and I are not on the same page. Not that I think they're there yet, but with what I saw from Cade Horton last year, and I think the addition of Edward Cabrera, and what you're talking about with how they can bring pitchers, you're talking about it with relievers, but I think they can do it with starters too. With Edward Cabrera coming in and their ability to sort of tap into these guys and get the best out of them, and a healthy Justin Steele hopefully at some point this year, along with Matthew Boyd and Shota and Jameson Taillon, I feel like they have potential to at some point this year hit a stride and be a somewhat dominant starting rotation. Do you disagree with that, Evan?
I feel like the delta between their ceiling and their floor is quite broad, a little bit more so than I would like. You know, other than seeing some flashes in the WBC, Jameson Taillon has looked really, really rough this spring, you know, more so. And again, with the full understanding that a lot of times these veterans who have been around for as long as he has are simply working on certain things and they're not concerned with the results. Totally get that, and that's fine. But when you look at, you know, again, Imanaga, a lot of problems with the home run ball. He's done some work on that. But Matthew Boyd, Justin Steele, Edward Cabrera have all had some pretty significant injury history in the past, whether they're coming back from that now. And so you just kind of look at it. There's a certain point at which I say there are a lot of question marks and a lot of red flags that if those things all go the wrong way, and I suppose that could be said about just about any rotation, but I do think this one is one of those where, yeah, if it all works out, I think they could be absolutely incredible. But if it doesn't, and now you're maybe relying on one or two guys at the top, and then you're looking at that 3, 4, 5 being kind of shaky, they could get into a little bit of trouble as the season goes on. But the depth that's there, you've got Colin Ray, you've got Javier Assad, right? So you don't need just 5 guys. But there again, I do think they're susceptible to the home run ball in particular, which even if they do well in the regular season, we saw what happened in the postseason. And that could really come back to bite them a little bit.
Talking with Evan Altman of Cubs Insider here on the Score Evening Show. Getting to the lineup and the offense of this team, I was talking Cubs in the last segment. I had a caller call in and basically say good riddance to Kyle Tucker. He feels like it was a good thing that he moved on. I'm not there. Like, I know the second half was frustrating and not as productive as we all wanted it to be, but you look at that guy's pretty consistent production when he is healthy in this league, and that's a high-level hitter right there. How do you think they replace peak Kyle Tucker and what we saw from that guy, especially in the first half of the season, with what they have in the lineup this year?
Yeah, I mean, the Tucker thing, and I totally understand the idea of recency bias, right? That second half and
right.
stuff with the calf and kind of leaving the team, whatever, totally get it. But that first half, I mean, we were talking about an MVP candidate, right? Like, this is, everybody is like, wow, this is the best trade. They need to extend him now, keep him in Chicago for the next 10 years. And it's tough because you're talking about a superstar level performer trying to replace that. And so there's no one move, you know, as good as Alex Bregman has been, he's not Kyle Tucker. As good as Moises Ballesteros could be, he's not Kyle Tucker. And so you really are expecting, okay, Bregman's part of it. You've got to have PCA have a more consistent season. You've got to have Seiya Suzuki first healthy, and then again, being more consistent. Ballesteros has to be the man in there at DH. Matt Shaw has to take a step forward offensively as well. So I think it's less about who's one guy they need and rather look across and say, hey, if we can get just a little bit more, I think Michael Bush is another guy who could still, I think it's shocking to most people, but he was one of the top 1, 2, 3 offensive first basemen in baseball.
Yeah.
Right. Despite the fact that he got overlooked for the Silver Slugger. But I think he's still got a potential to take a step forward. So you say, hey, we don't need one guy to do it, but if 5 or 6 can just step their game up a little bit and be more consistent. That's the issue last year. PCA, first half to second half. Tucker, first half to second half. Let's just try to get that a little more even keel. And I think that will go a very long way toward keeping the Cubs in first place.
I was reading your 10 bold Cubs predictions at CubsInsider.com, and folks should go and check out Evan Altman's work over there. And you have Moises Ballesteros winning NL Rookie of the Year. That would go a long way. Like, I don't know exactly what that looks like, but I'd assume that goes a long way in replacing what we're talking about in Kyle Tucker if that guy is NL Rookie of the Year when all is said and done.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and he's just – all he's ever done is hit, you know, and there's a story about the Cubs, kind of their international scout, you know, getting film from guys and say, hey, send me some of the bad swings. And they're like, there are none. that's what he looks like all the time. And you know, we went, my son and I went to see when Cade Horton last year made his season debut for the Iowa Cubs. It was in Indianapolis, and we went to see, and Ballesteros was there. Maybe that was one of the later games. I don't know. We went to a couple of them, but anyway, there was a kid asking for his autograph, and I looked over at the kid, and he's right there. I said, hey, you better keep that because this guy's going to be a superstar. Like, he has whatever that it factor is, because if you put 10 guys in a lineup, you would never pick him out as the best hitter. He doesn't look it, you know, but to me, he's that Alejandro Kirk's an easy comp, you know, but Jose Altuve is kind of another one. You look at guys who, you know, based on shape alone, they don't look like they should be able to do it. And yet, you get them out there on the field, and they're just going to light everything up in BP, and they're going to carry it into the game. I really believe this guy, given consistent MLB at-bats, and he already did it right when he came up. We saw in a small sample. You give him an everyday spot in a lineup, and I think he's going to be one of the best offensive players on the team.
Evan, what does a successful Cubs season look like for you in 2026?
They have to win the division. That's minimum right off the top. And then I think, again, a trip to the NLCS, you know, I got to make the playoffs. Obviously they will if they win the division, and you've got to win some ball games there. You've got to make it to the championship series. If you're going out there and signing superstar players and you're making a trade with your number one prospect, nothing short of World Series competition, World Series competitiveness is going to be acceptable in my mind. So 90-plus wins, win the division, make it at least to the NLCS. That's what it's got to be.
We're on the same page. That is Evan Altman, editor-in-chief and writer over there at CubsInsider.com. You can follow him on Twitter, at DEvanAltman. Evan, always appreciate the time and the insight, my man. Have a great weekend.
Hey, this is John Rothstein, the host of Inside College Basketball Now, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, reminding you that our show is going to ramp up over the next 2 months. That's because we're counting down to Selection Sunday and March Madness. We will be coming to you each and every week with multiple episodes featuring exclusive interviews with the biggest and best names in the sport. It's the all-you-can-eat buffet for college basketball junkies everywhere.
Follow and listen to Inside College Basketball Now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast.
All right, you the same. Take care.
Let's get back to more Rami Makhlouf on Chicago's Sports Radio 104.3 The Score.
When we were building U.S. Bank Stadium in Minneapolis, you know, we toured every dome stadium. And one of the things that I heard kind of over and over is that the majority of teams who have retractable roofs, they very rarely use them. It was a nice to have. And because I am budget conscious and want to make sure that we're prudent with our resources and our dollars, I think, you know, from a financial standpoint, a retractable roof, it would be a nice to have, but I would rather make sure that we use those dollars on the surrounding, you know, areas or for fan amenities that they would be able to enjoy it. That's the main reason why. And I'm a big believer in the roof that we have in Minnesota, the ETFE that they have at SoFi, you know, they have in Minnesota. I think it works well in our climate in Chicago, and it makes it where the sun, you feel like you're sitting outside. So in order to do it, you know, you can't do a retractable roof with that ETFE.
That was Kevin Warren a good 2 years ago talking about what he'd like in terms of a roof on the new Bears Stadium. No real news to share on that front, and I know a lot of you, and I know I, have stadium fatigue when it comes to the Chicago Bears. We were supposed to have shovels in the ground and cranes in the sky by 2025. We are a quarter of the way into 2026, and still no concrete solution to the Bears' stadium problems. Although there is one firm, and we're going to talk with Bruce Levine coming up at 8 o'clock, get back to some Cubs talk. There is one firm today that put out their own proposal in terms of the Bears' future home, and that future home is Soldier Field, but with a major overhaul of the historic stadium. This from Fox 32. There was a concept released by the architectural firm Edward Peck Design that outlines a plan to transform Soldier Field into a year-round venue with a roof and a new entertainment district along the lakefront. What we know about it so far, it would increase capacity to about 72,000 seats. About 1,800 of those would be luxury suites. Another 8,700 would be general seating spots. You heard Kevin Warren mention the ETFE transparent roof. This is part of the design, which designers say would allow the stadium to host events year-round, from football games to concerts and conventions. An ETFE roof is a lightweight, transparent material that works like a glass roof, letting in natural light while protecting against the weather. That's what Kevin Warren was talking about there. It also includes a new entertainment district surrounding the stadium. It would be built on a deck over Lakeshore Drive and nearby rail lines, creating room for restaurants, retail, hotels, apartments, public gathering. And they say that they have an idea for improving access to and from the stadium, including better connections to public transit. Also includes a proposed high-speed water taxi stop. I don't know if they were listening to Spiegel and Holmes a couple days ago when I was, and Spiegs was fired up about this potential new site for the White Sox and that you could take a water taxi there. It sounded like he couldn't wait to hop on a water taxi and go catch a White Sox game. And I don't know if this firm heard that and was like, that sounds like a good idea. They say it would connect the site to the neighborhoods along both the north and south sides, while taking advantage of its location near downtown, the museum campus, and McCormick Place. And I think, you know, like I said, I have stadium fatigue. I really don't like the idea of the team moving to Indiana. If it happens, I'll swallow that pill, and I'm still gonna watch the Bears. I've said time and time again, like, ultimately, I don't go to a lot of football games. I think it's a sport better enjoyed on TV. Just if going to a game is a great experience, but just for watching the sport of football, I think it's a sport better enjoyed on TV. And it's going to look the same for the most part at Soldier Field, somewhere else in the city of Chicago, if it's in Arlington Heights, if it's in Indiana. They are the Chicago Bears, and I take great pride in being from Chicago, and so I'd like to see them stay in Chicago or the Chicago area. So I don't love the idea of moving to Indiana, but again, I will swallow that pill, and I'm still going to be a Bears fan if that is what indeed happens. And I really like this proposal. I really love the renderings of this thing are beautiful, man. And they always are when you see the renderings. They don't always look like the renderings. Like I remember when the Texas Rangers got their new stadium a few years ago and the finished product looked nothing like the renderings that they had seen that sold Rangers fans on it. Finished product looked more like an airplane hangar than a baseball stadium, and people were not pleased with the aesthetic of it. But this looks beautiful. Again, I'm getting this from Fox32Chicago.com if you want to take a look at it, and a lot of other outlets had it as well. It's a beautiful looking stadium, and in the modern day, you need what they're talking about in terms of some kind of business district and shopping and restaurants and apartments around a development like this. So that meets that requirement. But the number one thing for me, because I do think there is something to the Bears and Soldier Field. You know what I mean? Like the nostalgia of it, the history of it. And if you could keep it there, that's great. But the main sticking point to me when I do on the rare occasion go to a Bears game is just how hard it is to get in and out of Soldier Field when you have a major event like that. If they do have a plan to make it more accessible, like I said, through better connections, through public transit, through the high speed water taxi, if this is realistic and something they can do, this is probably the best proposal and rendering of a new Bears stadium and best idea that I've seen, if it's something that can be pulled off. The one problem is this. It's not even clear who asked Edward Peck Design to develop the proposal, or if it was the Bears, if it was the mayor's office, and I have a feeling if it was one of the major players involved, the Bears or the city, that they would have put their name on this, and they didn't. And what this reeks of to me, and I hope this isn't the case, because like I said, I really like this idea, and I think it looks real snazzy. What this reeks of to me is Edward Peck Design sees all the headlines that Bears Stadium chatter is getting and all the clicks and all the views that Bears Stadium chatter is getting and said, you know what? Let's just throw this out there. So people have to put Edward Peck Design in their articles and social media postings when they put this out. Let's up the profile a little bit and see if we can sort of ride the wave of all the hype of this new Bears stadium whenever and wherever it might get built. So I don't know how much there is to this. It doesn't seem like there is a ton to it because, like I said, neither the Bears or the city are attaching their name to it. But if you see this, and there's more to read about it, I got to get to a break and talk some Cubs with Bruce Levine. It's probably my favorite idea yet for a new Bears stadium. I just don't know how real it is because nobody involved in the process is attaching their name to it. But we'll see. And I'm sure there'll be more, and we'll keep getting pounded over the head with Bears Stadium stuff until one day, it's gonna happen in Chicago or Arlington Heights or Hammond or Des Moines or what. It's gonna happen. The Bears are gonna get a new stadium, and Kevin Warren is gonna get those shovels in the ground and cranes in the sky that he wants so bad. We'll hit a quick break on the other side. Back to some Cubs talk with Score Insider Bruce Levine. He'll join me, Rami Makhlouf, to preview opening day for the Cubs and the Sox right after this. It's the Score Evening Show on Chicago Sports Radio 104.3 The Score.
Do you have a dark curiosity? Follow and listen to Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.